Blog
Since summer's right around the corner, I thought this one was appropriate. I think we'll jump right into it, but Australia's court grants control over South Australian biking. They're starting to use that law about associating. Anyway, a former bikie has been banned from associating with three members of a club under South Australia's controversial anti-bikie laws. The High Court ruled one section of the law unconstitutional, but South Australian police used another section of legislation in seeking the order against, I won't say his name, in Adelaide Magistrates Court today. Magistrate Kim Miller said he accepted police submissions that banning said person from associating with the three gang members would markedly reduce the risk of engagement in serious criminal activity. The only thing that stops him from doing it here is the Bill of Rights. But Mr. Malley declined to agree with police request that Mr. also be banned from attending any pub, club, or entertainment venue. He said he was not persuaded that police had established any clear nexus between Mr. going to the pubs and clubs and his criminal offending. Mr. Brown had argued against the control order and told the court he was no longer a member of that club. He also regretted his previous behavior, which led him to serving time in jail, including a 9-month sentence for breaching of good behavior bond. I frankly admit that I have in the past engaged in irresponsible and ridiculous behavior, for which I am again sorry, told the court. However, I always admitted my guilt in relation to that behavior, which amounts to a crime, and have served penalties of imprisonment for that conduct. Notwithstanding his changed perspective, he accepted there was a long-established risk he would engage in serious criminal activity while associating with the members. I accept the submission of the applicant that an order be made preventing the defendant from being in personal contact with each person, and will markedly reduce the risk of engagement by the defendant in serious criminal activity, he said. Put that up in the blog. I just put the link in there if you guys want to check it out. All these links I put in there are good. There's no spam, no nothing. But, yeah, I heard it's a busy weekend coming for everybody. There's actually three places I need to be. Time's going to be a factor. You can only spend probably about an hour and a half drive, 2 hours there, another hour and a half drive, 2 hours there, another half hour drive, hour and a half drive to the other place. But, being that yesterday was Memorial Day, a lot of things going on. There was a lot of accidents, a lot of crazy stuff going on. But let's see. I think it's appropriate we play this one. I'm waiting for a phone call. But, let's see. Here we go. I hear it, I get a little crazy. Let's see. I got another one here. Back to it. And die, men who mean
they say, the great men of the Green Beret, silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only three when the Green Beret trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day.
Because freedom isn't free. Thank you. For everybody that's still on duty around the world, here we go.
And if so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me. Your world like the 4th of July. And I'm a
sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. There's a sign, put your name at the top of his list. And a statue of a liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly. And it's gonna be hell when you hear mother freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. I'll brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
Came from. Check this out.
It was July in Virginia. The scent of the dogwood and the laurel lay heavy on the land, while the burgeoning fruit of the peach and the apple marked the full sway of summer. Yet the very ground itself had shuddered under the roar of cannon, bark of howitzers, and the crackling of a legion of rifles. Now all was silent. Sledgehammer blows of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson had mauled the Army of the Potomac, and yet that army was not destroyed. 7,000 men had fallen in that dreadful week, and the savagery of the conflict was grimly evident in the river of wounded through the green hills. Now a new sound drifted in the soft evening sky. For Colonel Dan Butterfield, a courageous and able soldier, was also a man of music. To honor his fallen comrades, he had composed a simple and heart-rending melody. On July 2nd, in the year of 1862, its strains floated over the graves that scarred the dark Virginia earth. More than 100 years since that sound was born, but those notes never died away. Every night of the year, throughout the world, fighting men of America from the north and the south, the east and the west, close their eyes in sleep to its call. And in each of their hearts, there glows a fierce surge of pride.
Everybody needed to hear this one.
You believe in the Second Amendment to the Constitution, right? I mean, you consider yourself a keeper of the flame, and you intend to pass that torch on to the next generation of Americans. So tell me, if you could see into the next century and know whether the Second Amendment is still intact or in shambles, would you look? If someone could predict the outcome a half a hundred years from now of all your conviction and commitment and hard work, would you listen? Well, you can.
What guarantees me freedom?
Oh, that's a hard question.
What is the Constitution?
I don't know.
Gives me freedom?
I don't know.
Will they be the keepers of the flame?
No, I do not think everybody should have a right to own a gun.
What is the Constitution? I don't know.
Guns, in general, are very bad.
What is the Constitution? I don't know. What's the Constitution? I don't know.
Will they carry the torch?
I have no idea what the Second Amendment is.
An amendment is...
Oh, I know. The Second Amendment,
Let me think. What is the Second Amendment?
You got me there. I don't know.
What's the Second Amendment? I don't know.
Something's gone wrong. For all our vigilance and battle scars over the Bill of Rights, and we let the flame of freedom's torch grow cold. Because there can be no torch to pass where there's no flame. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment. Textbooks ignore it, schools teach against it, clergy preach against it, politicians legislate against it, media ridicule it, movies pervert it, courts avoid it, and too many gun owners permit it. So it's not unreasonable that with one lost generation, we could lose the Second Amendment forever. Because we didn't teach them what the battle's all about. We didn't strike that spark in their hearts that lights the fire for freedom. So why does that belief burn so brightly in you and me? Our core beliefs are the work of all the men and women of our childhoods. A constellation of people who orbited around us, tugging here, pushing there, day after day as we grew, shaping our beliefs, carving our characters until we became who we are. You remember them? Parents who didn't just talk about values, but who lived out those values. The gym coach whose knotted rope taught you to pull your own weight. The scoutmaster who surely had a job and a family to tend to, but always made time for you. Clergyman whose moral compass helped guide your way. The grocery store owner who played along with mom in an unscripted scolding that ended your candy pilfering days forever. The principal whose handmade paddle was somehow comforting. It meant punishment was certain. So was forgiveness. The neighborhood teenager who bragged about joining the army, but whose silence after the war taught you even more. The teacher who stood up for the weak and stared down the bully. The neighborhood policeman who didn't just know the law, he knew everything you were thinking. That stranger you watched at the football game who, during the national anthem, unknowingly guided your hand over your heart. And that woman by him, her eyes fixed in the flag, who taught you patriotism isn't just for guys. All those people, they gave you a sense of geography about your life, where you fit in, right and wrong. Each of us is a tapestry of threads woven by all of them. They understood their part in the pattern, personal responsibility, freedom, honesty, justice, the Bill of Rights. That is the living torch they passed to us. Imagine if every kid had learned what we learned. That without a Second Amendment, by what means could a free people expect to protect freedom? We learned that. History proves it. Common sense confirms it, and any school kid can grasp it. Only people who are free to own firearms can remain free people. If every kid could just learn that a gun is a thing to be handled with care and respect. Yes, honor. Because beneath all the trappings of hobby and camaraderie and sport, a firearm is the fundamental symbol of our freedom. Because a firearm gives the most common of common men the most simple and supreme right to pursue life and liberty and happiness in accordance with and under the protection of the law. That's why the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is the passion we must ignite in those who follow. All of us who feel that surge of pride, chill at the genuine glory of a free people able to protect their own freedom. So what are we doing about it? Yes, we can blame violent crime or Sarah Brady or the media or bullet-riddled movies, and certainly some blame is due. But what effort has our generation spent to make sure the next generation feels as deeply as we do? If we focus on anti-gun legislation but ignore an anti-gun generation, if we spend years as pro-gun activists but only minutes as pro-gun mentors, if we've earned the support of this generation of office holders but not the next generation of voters, we will have failed. We must tell it, teach it, live it, breathe it. Every one of us born beneath this blessed American sky has rights nobody can take away, because no one gave them to us. They were ours from the beginning. Each of us has a birth certificate, but it didn't give us life. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are alive. In the same way, the Constitution didn't give us rights. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are free to say and write and think and work and worship as we choose. We're free to own a firearm, and that right shall not be infringed. If you consider yourself a freedom-loving patriot, you can't shirk your duty to teach America's young to understand the Second Amendment, to revere it, to embrace it, to defend it, and in their turn, to bequeath it. That's what we have to do. We, the teachers, the neighbors, the clergy, the uncles, the grocers, the legislators, the scoutmasters, the parents, the Americans. Only then can we pass the torch with that sacred flame that lights the American way.
Let's see here. Okay, let's see. There you go. This one's appropriate.
Every time our country stands in the path of danger, an instinct seems to summon her finest first, those who truly understand her. When freedom shivers in the cold shadow of true peril, it's always the patriots who first hear the call. When loss of liberty is looming, as it is now, the siren sounds first in the hearts of freedom's vanguard. The smoke in the air of our Concord bridges and Pearl Harbors is always smelled first by the farmers who come from their simple homes to find the fire and fight, because they know that sacred stuff resides in that wooden stock and blued steel. Something that gives the most common man the most uncommon of freedoms. When ordinary hands can possess such an extraordinary instrument, that symbolizes the full measure of human dignity and liberty. That's why those five words issue an irresistible call to us all, and we must. So, we set out this year to defeat the divisive forces that would take freedom away. I want to say those fighting words for everyone within the sound of my voice to hear and to heed, and especially for you, Mr. Gore. From my cold, dead hands.
Hello, caller.
Yeah, Phil.
Hey, Art, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good.
Yeah, I think our Memorial Day thing is a day late, but you can never get the message out enough.
That's true. That's true.
What's going on over in Poway?
Not a whole lot. You know, they did their regular cemetery programs and stuff, so that was good. I had to swing by the new Miramar cemetery. It's open. And go visit somebody from the family that's over there now.
Don't have any incoming, do you?
Yeah, he's cruising north. Headed your way.
Well, I was gonna
Must
say
be a police helicopter.
Okay.
But it was a good day. I hope enough people actually thought about what it meant.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. You know, I think I have here what is the best Memorial Day speech ever. And if you want to hang on and let me play this, then we'll talk after.
Okay.
Our speaker is a native of Walworth County, having lived in Delavan, Lake Geneva, Darien, and Walworth. He attended Delavan Darien High School from 1993 to 1997. That his wife, Sarah, presently teaches math at Delavan Darien. They have two sons, Brady 11 and Riley 10. Our speaker joined the Wisconsin National Guard in 2002. He served with various units, eventually assigned to the 120th Field Artillery and shipped to Iraq in February of 2006. His tour of duty in Iraq was a story of compassion, redemption, and survival. He was wounded during his tour and is a recipient of the Purple Heart. In 2007, he was designated Wisconsin's American Legion Soldier of the Year.
To be honest, when George Bowman, my fellow patriot, bestowed this honor upon me, it took all my will to not back down. Honoring the fallen is something so very personal that I didn't think I could share my own grief. But if I was the first person asked, then it was my duty to not let this burden fall on someone else's already heavy heart. There have been 1.6 million U.S. soldiers that have served in the combat theater in the Middle East since 2001. That is 0.5% of the current U.S. population. If you compare that to the 2% of the populace that served in Vietnam, or the 12% that fought in World War II, this seems to be a minor incident. As of March 17, 2008, there have been over 4,000 United States fatalities from Operation Iraqi Freedom, with approximately 74 of them officially declared Wisconsin's sons and daughters. Now, I stand up here and throw out these numbers, and you, my friends, my neighbors, either react with a sorrowful sigh or a desensitized disdain. And if you did so react, it's not your fault. It's hard to feel grief, compassion, anger for over a five-year period of time. It's hard to feel anything at all when only numbers are flashed across the screen or spoken from a podium. Numbers are not faces. Numbers are not people. Numbers are not names of loved ones. Names of my comrades can fall from my lips like tears from my own eyes. Staff Sergeant Todd Olson, Corporal Kenneth Cross, Specialist Sean Novak, Staff Sergeant Stephen Martin, Private Isaiah Hunt, Major Chris Splinter, Captain Jonathan Kurth, and Specialist Justin Linden. These are all Wisconsin sons and daughters. I'm sure more than a few of you know of Justin. Justin played baseball for the Clinton Cougars. Justin graduated from Clinton in 1999. Justin moved to Oregon, where he met his future wife, Sarah. Justin and Sarah were married on February 28, 2004, just before Justin was deployed to Iraq. On June 4, 2004, Specialist Justin Linden was killed when his convoy was attacked by improvised explosive devices and rocket-propelled grenades. I have never seen so much loss and so much pride fill a man that it does with Wayne Linden, Justin's father. Every time he thinks about his son, you see the loss and the pride in immeasurable amounts. I, too, have felt the loss of a soldier. Losing a soldier has affected my life in ways that I still have yet to fully understand. This soldier was not my son. No, God willing, never that. And it was not during combat with an enemy. The soldier was my father by my birth and my brother through our service and our love of our country. While Dan Hubbard was attending Elkhorn High School, his cousin and friend since childhood, Michael Stauffit, was engaging democracy's enemy in Vietnam. On November 1st, 1966, my father's cousin was killed by small arms fire. Private First Class Michael Stauffit's name can be found on panel 12E, line 8 of the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. My great-cousin was the third Warwick County resident to die in Vietnam and the first of Elkhorn's sons. My father could not cope with his friend's demise. He tried to attend college, but I believe my father could not shake the feeling of, if only I was there, if only I could do something. My father, Dan Hubbard, enlisted in 1969 and was quickly sent into the war zone. The things he saw there I shall not repeat for you this morning. The atrocities and inhumanity was widespread. My father saw combat, some of which I cannot attest. And when he came home, he was physically and mentally disabled. Now my father's had an entirely different war thrust upon him upon his return home. A war for recognition and compassion. A war fought against and for the country in which he so loved. He was denied a Purple Heart. He was denied his dignity. He was denied a clean conscience. By the time I turned 14, my father had given up his battles. On February 11, 1992, Dan Hubbard, my father, died. Nameless, faceless, another statistic of the Vietnam era. Another number. He was buried on February 14, 1992, Valentine's Day, with his Purple Heart on his chest. Raymond Dan Hubbard asked you, my friends, my neighbors, to accept my apologies. I cried your pardon. I beg you for forgiveness, for I had forgotten the face of my father. When I was 14 and I had taken up smoking, I had forgotten the face of my father. When I was 16 and started to drink heavily, I had forgotten the face of my father. When I was 17 and dropped out of high school, I had forgotten the face of my father. During my graduation from basic training at the age of 24, I felt a hand clasp my shoulder. I looked up into my father's proud eyes and wept quietly in formation. Prior to my deployment training, I chose a picture taken of my father while he was in service to his country in Vietnam. I attached it to my bunk so he could always watch over me during my tour. On July 4th, 2006, our nation's Independence Day, when a large self-propelled rocket detonated mere meters away from me, I saw my father's face again, fighting to keep me alive. My friends, my neighbors, only through our perseverance and never forgetting will we get through these difficult times ahead. Only through our humility and never forgetting will we make them who have served feel our gratitude. Only through our unity and never forgetting will we honor the fallen. My name is Sergeant Raymond Hubbard, and I will never forget the face of my brothers. Thank you.
What do you think about that, Art?
Boy, that don't grab your heart.
Absolutely.
Oh, well.
Absolutely.
That's a quick kick to the groin there.
Yes. Kind of had a loss for words right now.
Yeah.
I think you enjoy this one. Let me get my composure. I think you need to, too.
The president today blistered the Democrats, accusing them of dividing the country.
While the other party is trying to build a coalition by segmenting America into warring factions, over the past years pitting white against black and women against men, young against old, we've taken a more positive path.
Speaking at a Republican fundraiser, Mr. Reagan also said, if his party loses control of the Senate, the nation's security could be at stake.
The opposition often acts like a weaker America is a safer America. But like it or not, that's the kind of bizarre logic that will carry the day if the other party regains control of the Senate.
Reagan spokesman Larry Speake said, quote, you give hardline speeches on holidays, but would not explain how the Democrats are dividing the country. And Speaks maintain the president's tough talk about the Democrats won't hurt chances for bipartisan cooperation on tax reform. Earlier, the president made a much less partisan stop at Disney World. Trying to bring the Reagans here, the Disney people reassembled the president's inaugural parade, a parade that was canceled last January for fear the 7-degree temperature would endanger the marching bands. Today, some of those same bands marched in 85-degree weather, and the Reagans loved it. The president also used the occasion to promote his tax plan, which he calls the Second American Revolution.
The reform that I will announce tomorrow will represent a dramatic effort to make our tax code more simple, efficient, and fair.
Mr. Reagan will continue campaigning for tax reform, going on national television tomorrow and then touring the country. But chances are the attacks on the Democrats will be dropped right here. Chris Wallace, NBC News, with the president in Florida.
At one of the president's stops in Florida today, demonstrators supporting his Central America policy attacked a group protesting U.S. involvement in that region. Three of the pro-Reagan demonstrators.
You know, I got one thing that this one describes the true meaning of Memorial Day, and we'll stop.
Okay.
Right shining, yeah.
Things to do when the police stop you.
Yeah.
I got another one the other day, and actually, before I get into that one, what do you think about we should be able to run red lights?
I have brought that up since my son-in-law is PD, and I have brought that up, you know, and because you're in a lose-lose situation. If you're in a left turn lane, and you're sitting at the light, and a light won't change, if you make the left turn, you're in violation. But if you pull back over and go straight, technically you're in violation.
Right.
So it's a lose-lose. I mean, if the cop wants you, he's going to play the game. You know, he's got you.
Right.
So what he told me was, if it's just got a single white line, that's just more or less a suggestion.
Right.
That cracked me up when I heard that. So you can actually pull back over and go straight. But I do like the idea that if the light doesn't pick you up in a reasonable amount of time, you know, like within 3 or 4 minutes or through 2 light changes, that you should be able to go if you use safety.
Right. I mean, I tried it once already. The guy, I'd seen him sitting on the corner. He sat there. I sat through 3 cycles when everything and going east to west, it was red for me. So going east to west and it turned red, there was nothing coming the other way. I turned left through the light. But it was a green light. It was no turn light. So he shot across the street, pulled me over and wanted to know why I went through the light. I said, well, I sat there for almost 10 minutes. Well, you know, that car was coming up behind you. I didn't see a car. So when I turned around and looked, there was a car sitting there waiting for the light to change. So basically, I should have waited another cycle. So he let me off with a warning. Let me off with a warning.
Yeah. But, you know, you can always say that. You should have waited one more cycle. You know, that's like a woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Yeah, well, that's just like when they pull up and the light's red and they decide to blow it.
Yep. But you know what I've noticed a lot, too? I don't know, but out here in California, it used to be the cops always had their headlights on when they were driving during the day.
Right, not anymore.
And I've been seeing a lot of them with their lights out. And that used to always be an indicator I looked for was headlights on.
Right. Well, they need money, so they're choosing all the tricks.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely, I've seen a lot of them out.
You know, it's like, I don't know if you know, but June is Lane Courtesy Month. Did you know that?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So there's two key principles to the traffic safety that are not understood and certainly not practiced. But by much of the driving public, some may argue that lane courtesy and proper lane merging techniques are law enforcement issues. Indeed, most states do have laws that count the obstruction of traffic by either hanging out in the left lane or by blocking necessarily merging as infractions. The trouble is that both types of violations are difficult to enforce, and when the issuance of more tickets truly provided a long-term solution for a traffic issue. Prefers lane courtesy and lane merging as educational issues. This is why for several years now, we have designated June as Lane Courtesy Month and have used this opportunity to explain the benefits of staying out of the left lane unless passing slower traffic on the right. And then, the Federal Highway Administration of how to best merge with other traffic when approaching a lane closure. This press release was distributed to several thousand new national media outlets last week. Our work will not be done until each and every driver understands the importance of lane courtesy and lane merging to everyday traffic flow and safety. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I usually get flipped off or they want to force me into the other car.
Pretty much. But usually I can stay in the left lane because I'm usually passing slower traffic.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
So I'm not real worried about that.
Now, I came home today and it was like people were doing 85 to 90.
Oh, yeah.
Like I wasn't going fast enough, you know?
Yep. One thing I did find out, I had a police officer explain to me, and I was lucky, that if you put your turn signal on and start to make a move, but never leave your lane, and there's somebody in the lane next to you and they have to move real quick, that's considered an unsafe turn, even though you've never left your lane.
What? Say that again?
If you're driving down the road, say you're in the left lane, okay?
Yeah.
And you want to go to the right lane. So you flip your blinker on. You start to make your move as you look next to you and there's a car and you come back into your lane, right? You never leave your lane. You just kind of move over a little bit and
right.
You stop and the other car swerves to the right. The police can pull you over for an unsafe turn or lane change.
Right.
Even though you've never left your lane.
That's reaching.
Yeah, but that's the way that it's written. And I was talking to, like I say, the family police officer, and I was talking to him, and he goes, yeah, because once you did it and you start to make the motion, it's the intent. I was like, you got to be kidding. It's like, nope, that's it. So it's always something to think about, even before you start to move, to look, just to make sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, I don't know if you saw that memo where the Highway Patrol was instructed to write 30% more tickets this year.
Yeah.
And even if you're using a hand signal and you got signals on your bike, you're supposed to use both. Doesn't make sense. I mean, if you can't see my arm waving.
Yeah, usually, you know, like I said, I like to use hand signals. But if it's at night, then I'll go ahead and I'll usually hit my blinker as I'm doing my hand signals.
Yeah. But, or usually it's just the American symbol, that one hand signal, you know?
Yep.
But,
and there was also, I was talking to a guy from a bait and something people need to be aware of. In L.A. County, they passed some regulations, and it says if you have a knife with a blade over 3 inches long, that and the blade locks, okay, and it's inside your pocket, it's considered a concealed weapon, and it's a felony.
Oh, yeah?
If it's hanging outside your pocket, like a lot of the guys are doing now, it's a misdemeanor.
Right.
So it's different counties have different laws, and about those, that's just something that they got to screw with you. You want to get around it, you just put your knives and put them in your pouch or whatever on the bike till you get to where you're going, you know. But if they pull you over, they can't search your bags without a reason, and if you don't have any reason for it, theoretically, no, you're safe.
Well, that's just like the ball peen hammer that I have on top of mine. They're more worried about the hammer than they are the knife in my pocket.
Yeah. But L.A. has come up with this, and it's part of their stuff. They're trying to fight with the gangs and stuff, and they're not putting the word about the law changes until you get stopped, and all of a sudden they're processing you through for a felony that you have no idea you even committed.
Yeah. Well, Bill and I had a friend of ours, T-Rod, do that, and they got him for that up in Orange County. And he wrote to the manufacturer of the knife, and they sent their attorneys down and beat the case.
I'll have to keep that in mind. That's always good information.
Yeah. If you write the manufacturer and tell them what they're doing to you, like T-Rod did, and they sent their attorneys down. I don't remember what he wrote in the letter, but I know that when he went to court, he had two attorneys there from that company.
Okay.
But the other thing I wanted to talk about was filing a police complaint. This is the best news you're ever going to get. Filing a police complaint and reporting police brutality or misconduct is a step towards ending this abuse of power by police. Never, ever walk into the police station by yourself and try to file a police complaint. Civilian testers have shown that he may be harassed or falsely arrested for doing so. Police complaints are allegations of misconduct, and as a member of the public, you can file a complaint. When someone files a complaint against a police officer, an incident report is placed in the officer's record, so hopefully it will keep the officer from continuing to abuse his or her authority. It also makes the officer's superior aware that there might be a problem with an individual police officer that needs to be addressed. The examples of misconduct are rudeness, excessive force, soliciting or accepting bribes, drinking on duty, harassment, making a false report, good for alleging in the case of traffic tickets, use of narcotics on or off duty, discrimination, altering information on an official document, careless driving, driving rapidly or aggressively to a minor call, racial or ethnic intimidation, malicious threats or assault, and sexual harassment. And right now there's three guys downtown that are in trouble for that sexual harassment stuff. They've been following girls home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And a couple of them had previous complaints.
Yes, as well as down in San Diego, too. But it's all over.
Yeah.
Police complaints will not get a victim compensated for a police abuse. Police complaints are not lawsuits. If you file a complaint against a police officer and the police clear themselves, as they often do, the only recourse you may have is a civil lawsuit. A civil lawsuit, you may receive compensation if you or your attorney can prove damages or civil rights violations. Contact a competent civil rights attorney if you need more, or the ACLU, information about filing a lawsuit or civil rights violations. To file a complaint on a police officer, one of a less serious nature, you want to send a written complaint, certified mail, with return receipt requested. You can send a police complaint to Internal Affairs. Certified mail gives you some type of proof that you actually filed a complaint. What I do is make a copy of it and see what you might have forgotten the first time you wrote it. There's no need for emotions to be involved when you write your complaint, and the most important thing is to be truthful. If the police catch you in a lie, your complaint won't be credible, nor will any other complaints you send to them in the future. You can even be charged with making a false report against a police officer. The more information in your written complaint, the better. Your complaint should include who the officer is you're filing a complaint against, name and badge number, what the officer said or did, was he rude, abusive, or used excessive force, when it happened, date and time when the incident occurred, where did it occur, location the incident took place, how did the incident occur. And like Bill says, get the corroborating witnesses. Did you see that? Ask people whose story does not conflict with yours. If you have witnesses, you should ask each one of them to write a separate account of the incident. Do you have any type of evidence, like pictures or video recording? If you don't, send the original to the police. Send a copy. Mail the complaint certified mail with return receipt requested to Internal Affairs at the police or sheriff's department where the officer works. The complaint will be investigated and you should receive a letter back from the police agency on the status of your complaint. Most complaints will be in the favor of the police officer, but the good thing is the complaint will stay on the police officer's record. A lot of people don't understand that. It goes in their file. They might try to contact you by phone or mail to do a follow-up.
Okay.
Answer no to questions and don't go to the police station for an interview. Tell them everything you need to know is in your letter. They say goodbye. Stick to what you said in your complaint letter that you sent and nothing else.
Okay, now they were working on one of them. I'll check. Hello?
Yeah. There's a time limit on how long you have to have or how long you can file a complaint. For minor police and misconduct, you may have only 60 days and up to 6 months for more serious allegations. If you're interested to know what complaints have been filed against the police officer in your community, you may request a copy of that information be sent to you from the police agency. That's called a public service request. You fill it out. They got 10 days to answer you.
Okay.
Request a copy of complaints of police officers from that agency be mailed to you under the Freedom of Information Act or a public service request, and you would like this information sent to you within 10 days as required by law. Don't ever walk into the police station and ask for this information. Police officers either start acting real stupid on the subject or they get real pissed and start threatening you. Now for the bad news. Police officers don't like to have complaints filed in them, nor do they like citizens to ask for copies of complaints made against other police officers. For some reason, police officers think they do no wrong, and if they do, the public doesn't need to be aware of it. Never file a complaint directly with a police agency, especially if the complaint is of serious nature. See an attorney. If you do plan to hire an attorney, get one who doesn't live in your area. Don't get a lawyer from your town, county, or surrounding counties. Local lawyers work with some police officers, district attorney, and judges on a daily basis and may not want to win your case as bad as you do. You got to contact your state attorney general. For serious incidents, call the ACLU hotline. I'll put that up. Let's see, here we go. There we go. Here. Put that up in the chat room. And then you can also go to the... All right, so go to the Department of Justice site.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's like, when's it going to stop, you know?
Yeah. It's like, you know, well, when you're fighting the system, it fights back.
Huh? You know, it's like, that stuff going on in Australia, getting crazier by the minute, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you heard what I said in the beginning.
Yeah, but we have that non-association policy here with the street gangs.
Right.
So I think we've already got that there. And as long as we can keep from getting motorcycle clubs legally tagged as street gangs, you know, because if that tag ever comes across, then you fall under all that stuff.
Yeah, that's that. They threatened me with that once already.
Yeah. So. Oh, well, Phil, I'm going to have to run.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
I'll get back over there and be listening again here in a little bit.
All right. Thanks, Art.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see. There we go.
All our tears have reached the sea. Part of you will live in me. Way down deep inside my heart. Without fail,
Pete.
Hey, what's up, Phil? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, I called in before, but tonight I do all my bullshit paperwork for the courts that every month I have to check in with probation, and I get stacks and stacks of stuff from the courts that I have to fill. It's a real pain in the balls when you get in trouble, and, you know, they really, really, in Massachusetts, they really magnify a small crime into something. They make it look like you murdered somebody, you know. So I don't have to physically check in with my probation officer, but I have like a shitload of paperwork that I have to fill out and send to her, and proof of this and proof. And it's really, you know, it's really. I have Parkinson's disease, so my hands are real crampy, and I can't write that well, you know. And I'm sitting there and I get frustrated, and I'm looking at all this stuff, and I'm like, this is real bullshit. What a waste of paper, a waste of postage stamps, and a waste of my time to send stupid ass. A copy of my phone bill to show that I'm still living at my address, a copy of a community service, a copy of this, a copy of that. What a joke, man. You know?
Yeah.
I just talked to my mom about it. I just had her on the phone, and she's like, you know, you're in a bad mood. I said, no, I'm in a bad mood because I'm sitting here filling out all this bullshit paperwork for a crime that, you know, it's bullshit what they got me on, you know? And
yeah. It
just irritates me. I'd rather pay the $73 a month and not have to fill out any paperwork, you know?
Well, they get you coming or going.
What's that?
They get you coming or going.
Did they get me coming or going? Is
yeah.
that what you asked me?
No, I said they get you coming or going.
Oh, I thought you said they got me coming and going, because they did get me coming and going. They got me going down to Connecticut, and they got me coming back from Connecticut. When they got me coming back, I got arrested. But no, honestly, bro, it's, you know, I'm not going to get into my arrest. You know why I was arrested. You've heard my story a few times.
Yeah.
Come out of calling and I'll tell it in detail, but it's going to take so damn long. And it's really such a bogus arrest. It's in the appeals process. The state police, they pulled me over and, you know, they had a dog on me, and they had guns out, and they just, they took me back to the barracks, and they, this is a short version, they thought I was on some type of drug or alcohol. They gave me three breathalyzers, 0.0 every time. They never gave me a drug test. I wasn't doing drugs. I don't do drugs. Did I? Hell yeah, for years I did. And I've been clean for so long now, the most I'll do is drink a cup of coffee. But these bastards, based on my appearance, just went from head to toe with me at the state police barracks. They said that, you know, you know what I look like, Phil. You know, you got long hair and you get tattoos and you hang with biker scum, basically. And these people are, you know,
true Americans.
Yeah, and they were like checking me for gang tattoos and shit. You know, they like having me drop my drawers and they were like basically standing there laughing at me. Honestly, bro, now I know what it feels like to be black. Honestly,
yeah.
That's how thick the discrimination was. Now I can relate to people that are black to get harassed, you know, or Hispanic, you know. It was ridiculous. And now, you know, my appeal, my case is in the appeals process. And like my attorney said, he says, you know, you're probably going to get a not guilty at the end of all this because they never gave you a drug test. They never proved that you were driving on some type of drug. They never proved that. They never gave you a piss test or anything. So at the end of all this, which is going to take over a year, he said you'll probably get a not guilty, but it remains on your record, and you've already done your punishment. You've paid all the fines.
Don't miss that $73 a month payment.
Yeah, no shit. Well, you know what? The class I have to take is $600, man. $600.
Yeah.
$73 a month probation, and a shitload of other $50 miscellaneous fines that probably go in the judge's pocket. You know,
at the end of the tunnel, like he said, you get an appeal. You probably win your appeal.
Oh,
you get to
my punishment, bro. My punishment.
Yeah, but
done,
do you get to ask for a refund?
Well, they don't refund any. The only refund I can. I talked to a couple different attorneys about this, and some very good ones that have been attorneys for years. And the only refund that they mentioned to me, believe it or not, was. When I lost my license for 45 days. It cost me $500 to get it back. $500 just for first-time offense, OUI drugs. First-time offense, $500 for me to get my license back. And the guy at the registry who runs the registry told me, he said, there's a possibility that if you're found not guilty with your appeal, you could get this money back. And I said to the guy, I said, I'm not going to say his name because he runs the registry, and he kind of gave me a little bit of a break. But he said, I said to him, I says, I've never seen a refund from the Registry of Motor Vehicles in Massachusetts ever in my, you know, 28 years of driving, you know. I said, I've never seen it. And I said, I doubt it. I doubt that my $500 is going to be refunded. It's all about money in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. They got to get their little $73 probation fee. They got to get $600 for some stupid class that you have to go to once a week and with a bunch of alcoholics. I don't even drink, man. They put me in a class. They call it a 24D class, and it's all alcoholics. I don't even drink, bro. I don't even drink. I'm not a drinker. Never was. But they said that'd be good for me because it's, you know, I had some impaired driving, they said. But they never proved. They never proved anything on me. They never gave me a piss test, nothing. So, you know, it's a bogus case, and they know it. And the judge knew it because the judge told my lawyer right away. He's like, just appeal it. Appeal my decision, you know. So, but in the meantime, like, everybody's telling me, they're like, Pete, you're already going to do your punishment. All the fines will be paid. The class will be over with. You've already paid to get your license back. You know, it's already in your record. So the damage is already done. It's irreversible, you know. And it's just, it's corruption, man, if you ask me. It really is. It's corruption. It's crooked, you know. That's the great state of Massachusetts for you. And, you know, ask anybody that lives here, especially somebody like Hermes. He'll tell you. These bastards are crooked. They are just.
So did you file any complaints?
Well, here's the deal, okay. I know they listen to the show. They don't know who I am. I'm just saying my first name, and that might not even be my real first name. But here's the deal. Two top attorneys told me, they said, you have a great lawsuit here because basically the discrimination here is huge. They called you biker scum. They called you a long-haired hippie. They called you this. They did that. They did this. You got them there. And then the judge himself
on two occasions insulted me in front of 30, 40 people that were in a court. I get some pretty good things going, but I can't do anything until my appeal is, until it's over with. You know what I mean? Because if I do, both attorneys told me, they said, if you do anything right now, if you try to sue the state police or the judge or the Commonwealth while you still have an open case, they're going to make it harder for you. They're going to make sure that they bust your balls. They're going to make sure that you lose your case. So they said, they both said, they said, wait for the smoke to clear. Wait until your appeals, if you're found guilty or innocent, whatever. Wait for the
smoke. Yeah, but how long of a time frame?
Well, here's the thing, Phil. You know what? The lawyer I have now, he says, oh, that it could take up to 3 years. I says, oh, really? Money talks. So you know what? I talked to another lawyer. He says, listen, slot me down X amount of dollars on my table. We'll be in court for a day. I'll have you in and out, and I'll reverse the guilty to a non-guilty. You know,
uh-huh.
So it's all about money. You know, because
well, you know, you can submit a Freedom of Information Act and get all the information on those guys if they've done this before.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm gonna. I tell you, I'm so mad at the attorney I have. You know, when all this happened to me, I went with a court-appointed attorney because I figured the charges were so bogus that I didn't really need a professional. What I figured out was you get what you pay for.
But who pays that guy?
Who pays that guy? Well, actually, I had to pay him a small amount of money, but the state pays him.
Right.
But he's terrible. He's a rookie. He doesn't know shit. He should know that, and a good attorney friend of mine from the Worcester area here in Massachusetts told me, he said, who you know, I know you know him, told me, he said, when you, in Massachusetts, if you get stopped for OUI and they think that you're on drugs, they cannot give you a field sobriety test for OUI drugs. OUI alcohol is different. OUI drugs, they are supposed to take you and have you piss in a cup or take a blood test or pull your hair, piece of your hair out, something, have a specialist come. They're supposed to call somebody in to evaluate whether or not you're on something, and they're supposed to back it up with a piss test, and they never did that, you know? They never did it. They don't have shit. They got the guilty thing on me. The judge was in shock that I turn around now and said, yes. You know, he says, you don't like my decision, appeal it. I said, you know what? Yeah, I want to appeal it. And he was like in shock. He probably thought I was just going to settle for everything that they're doing to me. And what they're doing to me is wrong. I'm sitting here with my crippling hands trying to fill out paperwork to send to these bastards. And it's such a waste of time. Such a waste of paper, postage, and aggravation. It just really pisses me off. And the night that I was arrested was one of the most famous cases in this state of discrimination of a biker who wasn't even on a motorcycle. It was February, so it was still snowing out. I was in my truck, and they pulled me over. But as soon as they saw my looks, because you know what I look like, they were like, oh, my God, back up. We need backup, you know? Hands on the guns. Throw me to the ground. German Shepherd biting at me. Come on, man. Talk about overkill. I wasn't even fighting
them.
You know?
Sounds like what happens to me.
Well, you know how it is. You get the same treatment, you know? You know how it is. I don't have to tell you. You get the same treatment. You know, it's just, it's bullshit. It has to stop. They're like Nazis. They think that, you know, Hermes says that they're like Nazis. You know, they are, because they think that we're going to be in control. You know, they have this new law in Massachusetts now. If there's an emergency vehicle in the breakdown lane, you have to immediately get over to the left. If you don't immediately go over to the left lane to get out of their way, you get a $100 ticket. That's just a racket right there. You know why? Because there's probably cops sitting on the side of the road with their light, and I've actually seen this. They sit on the side of the road with their rear deck lights on with nobody stopped, no accident, and cars are going over to the left at the last minute. And you know those cocksuckers are sitting in the cruiser with a pen and paper writing plates down and sending them tickets to.
Oh,
get $100 from each person. Think about that. What a great idea, right? How crooked is that, man?
It's just like
very
when he
crooked.
Tells you, you have to answer my questions or you're not leaving until I find out what I want to know.
Yeah.
You know? You ask them, well, what's this about? And they say, well, you're not a suspect. We're simply investigating here. Just help us understand what happened, and then you can go.
Like
yeah, right.
This, the last show that I was on with you, which I believe was last Thursday, when Ryan's calling in, he just sent me a message. I listened to you talk about say nothing when the police stop you. Tell them to call your attorney, or you call your attorney. Say nothing to them. I'm so easy on... I'm so easygoing, Phil, that that night that I got arrested, I just started talking about what I had done, where I had been, and I was stupid, and I learned my lesson, you know?
Yeah.
Because I didn't think, it was, to me, it was a joke why they were pulling me over. And but, you know, they based it
on... Well, the best words I can ever tell you, Peter, shut up.
Exactly, exactly. Thank you. It's very true.
If you didn't get that, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Believe me, the more I hear it, you know, as they say, plead the fifth, you know. I'm like,
no, don't even plead the fifth. Just tell them you're not going to answer any questions till you're, you know.
See, let me tell you, I've been out to, they have the state police in Massachusetts train in a town called New Braintree, and it's a small little rich town. And the training academy, police training academy, used to be a prison. That they built it, but they never use it. So it's pretty nice. But the state police, they train there. And I used to go jogging up there. You can go up there and you can, there's a great track. I used to go jogging. And they would, I used to watch them train these cops. They train them like they were goddamn Nazis, you know. It was unbelievable. And the brainwashing that goes on. So that, you know, when these guys leave the academy, especially like a young trooper just getting out of the academy, they're so damn brainwashed, they want to bust everybody. You know, and then what the mass state, and I tell this to everybody, any show I go on, TV, radio, it doesn't matter. I'll tell it to anybody. The state police are big time into distraction techniques. They'll use distraction techniques, and they're good at it. In other words, they'll be giving you a field sobriety test, one trooper, and the other trooper will be screaming at you about why you have this and that in your car to throw you off balance, basically, and it works. You know,
yeah.
So that way there they can arrest you and say, oh, yeah, oh, you fell. Well, I turned my head and looked because the other cop was talking to me. What do you want me to do? And that's what they use, and they get away with it. But, you know, in this state, they used to have video cameras. The state police had video cameras in their car. They've had so many lawsuits against them for them messing fucking with people and beating people up and all that and violating their rights that they had to take the cameras out of the cruises. No more cameras in the cruises. Because I said to my lawyer, I said, let's pull the tape from the traffic stop, and they arrested me. He goes, nope, they don't use video cameras in the cruises anymore. I said, oh, gee, I wonder why. He's like, yeah, exactly. He says, because too many people complained. And when they were pulling the tapes from the cameras, they were seeing that there was way too much discrimination. There was way too much physical abuse, mental abuse on the person they were stopping. And so they took the cameras out of the cruises. I hope they put them back in. I hope we get like a good governor, because the governor we have here, he sucks, and he's just as bad as the president. And he, you know, I hope we get the next governor we have steps in and says, you know what, I don't want any more police corruption in the state of Massachusetts. I want cameras back in every cruiser in every town, including the state police. We'll never see it though, you know, because you know. The whole world's turning into a goddamn communist country anyway, you know what I mean? Pretty soon they're going to tell us more than can piss and shit, you know?
Well, listen to this. What I want you to remember, I don't want to talk until my lawyer is present. I won't answer any questions the police ask you except your name, address, and your age until you have a lawyer. Even if the police don't read you your Miranda rights to you, refuse to say anything until your lawyer, public defender, arrives, okay? About your public defender is he's not representing you, but is merely serving as your counsel. Okay?
Yep.
You voluntarily talk to him. They don't have to read you your Miranda rights. If you are arrested and cannot afford an attorney, you have the right to the public defender. But again, I tell you, he's not representing you. He's just serving as your counsel.
You want to hear something funny about that, Phil?
Sure, go ahead.
They changed the law. You asked earlier about what I had to pay for my attorney. Who paid my court-appointed attorney? Well, in the state of Massachusetts, they have passed a law now. I believe it's about a year old. It could be older. I don't know. I think it's about a year old. Hermes would know better than me. It's $150 for a court-appointed lawyer. Now, the Miranda rights in Massachusetts are exactly what you just said. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. Free of charge, basically, by the Commonwealth. I brought this up on a couple radio shows. I said, they're going to have to change the Miranda rights in Massachusetts. They're going to have to change the Miranda rights because court-appointed lawyers aren't free anymore. They don't provide shit. You have to, if you don't come up with $150 to pay that court-appointed lawyer, and to most people, that's a lot of money nowadays. You don't get a lawyer.
Yeah.
So my big question to, you know, the Commonwealth is of Massachusetts is, are you going to change the Miranda rights to include that $150 fee so people know? Because basically when you go, when I was arraigned and they told me that day, I must have had $10 on me. They told me, you need to go, you know, are you hiring a, do you need a public defender? I said, yes. And the judge said, go to probation and pay $150. I'm like, right now? And the judge is like, yeah, right now. I said, Your Honor, I don't have $150 on me. I don't carry the kind of money on me. And I said, may I ask what that's for? It's for your public defender. I'm like, well, it was my understanding that it was free of charge because obviously I'd been arrested before, you know, and I had free of charge. And it was a woman, actually. The judge was a woman. And she was nice about it, but she says, no, it's $150 and you have to pay it. And she said, if you can't pay it today, pay it within the next couple of days. But, you know, it's a good question, you know. It brings up a good point. Are they going to change the Miranda rights around now? Because you have to pay for a court-appointed lawyer. There's no free lawyer. Everybody says, oh, yeah, you know, a friend of mine got arrested about a week ago, and he says, oh, I'm going to go with a court-appointed lawyer. He's, you know, they're usually, some of them are pretty good, and they'll get me off, and da-da-da-da, and it's free. I said, no, it's not. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I hope you get $150 handy. What do you mean? That's a lot to me right now. I got to feed the kids. I says, because you have to pay for that lawyer.
Yeah.
It's not free. He's like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You know, and really, you know, $150 to most people is like, oh, nothing. Of course, pocket change. But to somebody, you know, working with kids and everything, that's a lot of money. That's half of somebody's paycheck. You know what I mean? So it's all bullshit. The whole world's gone to shit. And it's real bad on the East Coast. I was watching the movie, Mel Gibson, Edge of Darkness. You ever see that movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the movie, Mel Gibson plays a Boston police detective. And I counted at least five times in the movie where Mel's in a scene with somebody. And on one scene, there's a guy that's sitting there that's like, I don't know, he's a CIA or a secret agent or something. He's got like an English accent. He's talking to Mel. And he says, Mel says to him, because he's drinking a glass of wine in front at a park somewhere, and actually they shot it in Massachusetts. And he says, Mel says, drinking in public's illegal in Massachusetts. And the Englishman says, everything's illegal in Massachusetts, and it's true. And I counted that quote at least five or six times in the movie, and it's very true. Everything is illegal in Massachusetts. You can't have your truck lifted up too high. You can only be 3 inches. You can't have your exhaust coming out the side of your vehicle, like my truck I have coming out of the side. You can't have certain exhausts. Your motorcycle, it can't be too low to the ground. It can't be too high. The pipes can't be too loud. Your A-pangs can't be too high. It's ridiculous. It's a joke.
Yeah.
You know, it's the worst state in the world to live in, I'm telling you. It really is.
Well, the only reason they changed the A-pangers out here was because Schwarzenegger rode with A-pangers.
Who does Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, he was riding with ape hangers. He got a ticket, and he changed the law 2 days later.
See that, though? There's something crooked about that when you think about it. You know what I mean? It's okay for, you know, because he had them, the law changed. He gets a ticket for having them, and the next day he says, oh, I'm going to make a law. And that's great, you know, good for him, because I actually like the guy. But, you know, it's unbelievable, you know, that... Ah, boy, I didn't know that. That's a good one, you know.
Yeah.
He had ape hangers, and he got a ticket, you know. And then he changed
the
law.
As well as his wife getting tickets parking in the red zone while she's getting her hair done.
Oh, man, something else. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of having that much power and that much authority to, you know, you get a ticket for something. Say you're driving down the road, like in Massachusetts, you can't have your license plate and your motorcycle sideways. It has to be, you know, straight up and down, you know. You can't mount it upside down, basically. You know, it's a $100 ticket. I don't know about California.
Well,
I'm guessing they might have that law, too, but can you
No, it can't be vertical. It has to be horizontal.
Okay, so same law. But, you know.
All the guys that had it vertical, they changed it to horizontal. And all the new bikes they're selling now, like the new Harleys have it out down on the side, on the left side. It can only be a certain amount off the ground, and it can only be a certain amount of hanging off the bike.
Well, some of the dudes around here, who ride are cops, and they have their little, they're in the Holly Owners group, and okay, you know, I know a lot of those guys, but at least three of them that I know of that ride, they're police officers, they have their they have the plate mounted upside down, basically, and nobody says anything. Of course not, you know, but you or I do that and forget it, you know.
In the blue gang.
No. I get a kick out of them, too. They all act like 1% as they come. He says, you have to see it just to believe it. I mean, honestly, you know.
Dude, we got them out here, and I forget the name of these guys. It'll come to me. But the guy told us we have, our bylaws are stricter than the CIA.
If you know what, when you're online, Google Massachusetts State Police uniform. Have you ever seen the uniform of the Massachusetts State Police?
Yeah, it looks like a Nazi uniform.
That's where they got it from. It's a true story. I've been in the museum, the State Police Museum, up at the where I used to jog. I went in there to get a drink of water. I almost passed out and take a leak. I went in there. They have a glass case, and they have a uniform, and I believe it's green. See the green? Yeah, it's green. It's green, and it's. And they have a little thing underneath in it, and it says, original uniform worn by the state police, 1944, whatever it was. I guess several people have told me that the commandant, after the war, World War II, liked the look of the Nazis' uniform so much that he wanted his troopers to look like that, with the strap coming down, the crimped hat, the boots, the flared-up horse pants, all that shit, all the glossy belt accessories and all that. And let me tell you, Phil, I've been in court enough times with these bastards to see their mannerisms. They walk into the courthouse basically, you know, like Nazis, you know, the boots, clunk, 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 clunk. You know, it's like, you know, where's Hitler? You going to salute him? I mean, you know, you know, really, it's a joke. They shave their head bald all the way down. You cannot have any hair in the state police unless some of the older guys have a little bit of hair, but... These guys are a bunch of clowns, you know. And I was in the courthouse one time, and a trooper came in, and he walked right through the metal detector, and the security said, have a nice day, sir. A local cop came in from a small town, and they told him he had to check his weapon.
Yeah.
And the cop says, well, wait a minute, that state trooper that just went in has his weapon. He didn't check his weapon. I have to check my... I'm a police officer. I have to check my weapon? And they said, yes. He says that? No. He says, bullshit. I'm not checking my weapon. And he walked right through and went upstairs to the second floor to go to the session. Jury's wherever he was going. But I couldn't believe it. I was like, yeah. And that also happened at Dunkin' Donuts one. I was in Dunkin' Donuts and getting a coffee. And a trooper pulled in. And Leominster is a town here called Leominster. And a Leominster cop pulled in. And the trooper walked in with his little Nazi boots and all that. And he goes up and he gets a coffee and donut. Actually, he got a few things. He got like three coffees and like a dozen donuts. And the guy behind the counter was the owner. He's the owner of this particular Dunkin' Donuts. He says to the trooper, he says, you're all set. Trooper didn't give him a tip, nothing. Didn't even thank him. Just picked his stuff up and walked out. Leominster cop comes walking in and orders a coffee and donut, and the guy charges him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, do I get some type of discount here? Nope, we don't give police discounts. And he said, well, the trooper that just left here, I noticed that you know, he says, you know what, I'm not going to come visit this Dunkin' Donut. Unbelievable, man, how the state police and the Massachusetts State Police, they like, people bow down to them. And why? Because they do an extra month at the academy? Because their uniform looks better? Because they think they're stronger and bigger and badder? Some of the most... Everybody thinks that being the Massachusetts State Police, you have to be in shape and big and all that. Let me tell you something. The town I live in, most of them, they look like Fat Albert with a police uniform on, you know? So, you know, I don't know. They're so corrupt, man. They're so corrupt. You know,
they only have to be physically fit for that first test. After that, they're
exactly
on their own to maintain.
You're right. You're right about that. But I think it was Bill that said it. He said, what did he say? Oh, shit. He said something about, he goes, me and Phil don't hate all cops. We just hate certain cops. And I'm like, well, you know, my stepfather was a cop from Salem, Mass. He was a detective, and then he became a patrolman. And he hated cops, and he was a cop, you know. So do I like cops? No. Do I hate cops? Most of them, yeah. Once in a while, I'll get a break. But after what happened to me this last time, I have so much hatred in me, inside me, towards especially the Massachusetts State Police, because what they do is they set people up. You know, I'm surprised they don't throw a big bag of dope in my back seat and say it was mine, you know. A lot of the local cops, some of the smaller town cops, they're all right, you know. They'll give you a break. They'll lecture you. I've gotten lectures on support stickers I have had in the back of my truck by cops, town cops, and state cops, you know. Especially if you go into Connecticut. They hate
you. Yeah, but that's... That falls along the lines of discrimination.
Oh yeah, I've gotten so much shit over support shirts I've worn, stickers, and so I finally found I have a big monster truck, and right now it's down, it's not running, but I have a bunch of stickers in the back, Motorcycle Club, the Top Dogs, and I got a bunch of them on my back window and some on my tailgate, and I've gotten shit a few times. And from the cops, and they're like, oh, you know, what do you get those for? Give me a big lecture. I says, hey, it's not illegal to be a biker. So I was in a leather shop in Peabody, Massachusetts, and they had support gear, and they had shirts, and they had bumper stickers, and they had, you know, stickers, and they had belt buckles and hats and all kinds of stuff. And when I was leaving, I bought some stuff. When I was leaving, the owner of the shop hands me a bumper sticker, and it says, it's not illegal to be a biker.
Right, you know, on the back, it's on my back fender.
Yeah,
with the lady adjusted.
I slapped it on the bump, on my back bumper so quick of my truck. And my truck is really high up, so the cops can see that, you know. And when I'm stopped in the truck, which happens all the time, when it is, right, as I said, it's not running right now, but when it is running and I'm driving it, it's a big, huge monster truck, and they give me shit. They whenever they reference, you know, the stickers I have in my back window or the support shirt I might have on, I say to them, hey, didn't you read my bumper? What? I said, read it. And they go back. They come back. Oh, what? It's not illegal to be a biker? I said, exactly. You said it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not illegal to be a biker. It's not illegal to be in a club. It's not illegal to support a club.
So no, it's not.
Write me up for what you want to write me up for and let me be on my way, you know?
Yeah, unless you're in Australia right now.
You what?
Unless you're in Australia right now.
Australia?
They're still pushing that anti-association law.
Really? I think I read that.
Yeah, it's on the blog.
Don't they have that in parts of Canada? It's like that too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing, well, I mean, we have non-association laws here, but that's for guys on parole and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean,
the only thing that protects us from doing that is them doing that to us is the Bill of Rights.
Okay, all right. Enlighten me on this one, because I might sound stupid. What is the legal to be a gang? What is the, what are they considered? Somebody told me if you have five people in a group hanging together, you consider it a gang. Is this true? Is that true? I mean, is that what they go by? Three?
Three.
So if, you know, me and a couple of my friends were just riding our bikes and we, you know, decided to ride three together and have a little skull on our vest, but no, you know, no club or anything, we'd be considered a gang. They could consider us a gang, and they could actually RICO us if they wanted to, right?
Yeah.
I'm guessing yes.
Yes, and if you're wearing something that's supporting one club, you now become a known associate.
Yeah. That's, well, you know, like I've always said, wanted to go after the real criminals. Honest to God. You know? Honest to
mm-hmm.
God. The guy that, you know, there's so many in my area, well, my old neighborhood, they would constantly... I'd always have motorcycles on in front of my house. I had a bigger house. I had a big, nice front porch. And I'd have a lot of cookouts and stuff and barbecues. And there'd always be motorcycles on front, and the cops would always come by and harass us, you know, and tell us that we had to close the party down and da-da-da-da-da-da. And the particular neighborhood I lived in was, it was the ghetto. I had a beautiful house, but it was, I got it cheap, but it was in the ghetto. And there was, every other house was a drug house, you know, and the cars were, you know, here's the cops harassing us because, you know, we get Sweet Home Alabama playing on the radio, and we got, you know, long hair and tattoos and motorcycles, and you know, there's three or four cops out front harassing us because of who we are. But yet across the street at the same time, the drug dealers are laughing at the police because people are pulling up every 2 minutes picking up their crack.
Yeah, well, it's like someone we both know once said, we're not a criminal organization, we're just organized criminals.
Yep. I'm reading here from our friend Ryan. He says he's going to call in on Thursday. He's got a lot of things going on tonight. He says, just tell the guy that said hello. So he'll be calling on Thursday. I think he's going away soon. I know he's going away soon. I don't know when it's going to be, but he got a bad rap. Seems like a nice kid. So, anyway, I just I thought I'd vent a little bit. And
you feel better now?
I feel a lot better, and I appreciate it. And, you know, it's the truth, and it's everything I said is the truth. And, people are so they're so afraid, especially in this state, of the state police, mainly the state police, and the police, that they don't stick up for themselves. Especially men, guys on motorcycles and women on motorcycles, they don't stand up for themselves. They don't, you know, God forbid they went on a radio show like this and spoke about things they had been through. You know, when I first started doing these radio shows, a few of my friends that ride, they were like, you're crazy. We heard you last night. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. What are you doing? What are you talking about? It's. I'm not threatening anybody. I might use profanity here and there. I said, there's no threat there. It's everything I'm talking about is things that have been, that I've been through, things that are happening in this state. And my, you know, it's free, you know, we're free to say what we want. This is a free country. Last time I checked. Now,
that's
subject,
right.
Subject to change, and I think it's changing, and it has been for a long time. But last time I checked, we have freedom of speech. So if I want to come on a radio show and say the state police and are crooked, and the techniques they use are crooked, and they're corrupt, and things need to change, I'm going to do it. You know,
right.
I'm going to be heard. I'm going to be heard all the way from here to Australia. To Japan, whoever's listening, I want to be heard. I want people to hear me. I want them to know, you know, because like I said, this state is probably, you know, not the top, probably in the top five in the United States. The state of Massachusetts is the toughest when it comes to bikers, you know, gun laws, loud pipes. You can't even have, you know, I had a chopper one time. It was like a Triumph chopper, and I got stopped, and the cop said to me, this bike is not, you cannot ride this anymore on this road and ever again until you fix the forks. And I said, well, what's wrong with the forks? And he says, they're too long. I said, you'd be kidding me. He goes, nope, there's an actual chapter and section of Mass General Laws that prohibits you from your forks being too long. I says, so what are you going to do, measure them? I can tell by looking. I said, you got to be kidding me. You
right.
know, I'm not taking this thing up on the highway doing 100 miles an hour on it. You know, it's a chopper, you know. He says, well, you have to, and it wasn't even that chopped. It wasn't even that chopped. You know, it was a chopper, but it wasn't one of those big ones that you see, like a Pit Bull Titan or any of those. Not one of those. It's an old Triumph chopper, but I get shit for it, and get shit for the straight pipes, and you know, everything else. You know, even if you have any type of, sometimes you'll see, like, on some bikes you'll see somebody might have the grips might be like points on the end. You know, in
right.
this state, those are illegal. You know, you can't have that. If you have anything with a point that looks like a bullet coming, I mean, they write you up for everything here. It's pathetic.
Yeah.
It's pathetic.
Well, they just came out with some new hand grips that are a blade that disconnect.
Really?
But what I'm going to do is, no, I appreciate you calling, and I'm glad you feel better.
Well, thanks for letting
me
in, and I hope that I touched a few people, and hopefully they never move to this state. But, you know, I'll be on Thursday, and I'm sure between now, well, actually, I do have a couple other things to be, for Thursday's show, I'll save them, a couple
okay.
of things that happened between today and last Thursday when I was on the last show.
I got a little tribute I'm going to play to all the armed forces. And,
all right, cool.